back in 1906, when I was active in the labor movement in the state of West Virginia, we held our convention in the city of Charleston, the capital city of West Virginia, in an effort to induce the state legislature, which was then in session, to pass a law prohibiting the employment of children at the tender age of 11 and 12 to work in the mines. It had been the practice of the coal mines in southern West Virginia to virtually compel the miners that worked for them, if they had a boy that had reached the age of 11 or 12, forcing them to work leading mules into the mines and haul out the coals on trucks. If the men that had a son of that age working in the mines refused, they would lay him off so that the family would be compelled to make the child at that age work in the mines or else do without bread, because they never had any cash money. At their income, they were required to deal at the company store where prices were from 25 to 30% higher than if in any other stores. And these children, naturally, if they met with an accident, they perished. They got excited and perished on the spot. Where miners that had worked in coal mines over a period of years, if an accident occurred, they would reason together as to what is the best thing to do to save their lives. For 6 years, we had attended the sessions of the West Virginia legislature, pleading with them to pass a law prohibiting the employment of men under 18. But it was always defeated because those members of the legislature that did not willingly, out of their conviction, vote in support of the bill, they bribed them. And so each session, the bill was defeated. At the fourth session, I appeared before the committee that had the bill under consideration, and I pleaded with them to pass a law prohibiting the employment of children. I told them that if this bill is not passed, and you read an account in the daily papers where children of that tender age had again been killed on the mine, then ask your own conscience who the guilty party is. I say it's the member of the legislature that have refused year after year to pass this law protecting these children, and give to them that God-given right that every child has, the opportunity to go to school and develop the talent which God, their Creator, has given them, so that to the end that when they have completed their education, they can make their full contribution to a fuller and richer life. I walked through one of the little towns in southern West Virginia at the early hour of 4 a.m, and I saw a child 12 years old leading a mule into the mine. I saw them bring that child out, his body crushed and mutilated from falling stone. They brought him out on a truck, and I saw the mother taking that crushed and mutilated body in her arms and tried with kisses to bring those cold and unresponsive lips to life. Tears came to my eyes, and I vowed to the heavens that I would fight that greedy system of child exploitation as long as I had a breath of life in me. After again appearing before that committee that had that in charge, they finally passed a law prohibiting the employment of children under 18. And I said to the delegates in the congregation, I said, this indicates that if the men and women in West Virginia that have to work for a living would go to the polls and vote for the right kind of men, this law would have been passed years and years ago, and the lives of hundreds of children that were killed in the mine could be here today. I tried to impress upon them that the ballot was the strongest weapon that working men and women have if you just exercise it and use it in the right way. Don't vote for men because they're a member of your party. Examine their records. Vote for working men, and they will pass laws for the benefit of working men. If you elect lawyers or men of industry, they will pass laws denying the working men their God-given right in order to make more profit for themselves. And I say that today, that the ballot is the best weapon we have if we only use it intelligently.
Amen to that.
Yeah. I think that story ought to be prescribed reading in all the schools and the textbooks and for every elected member of state legislatures and to the Congress of the United States.
I did as my conscience dictated.
You know, and Dad, where he was.
I believe that with all my heart, and I believe that today. I have never missed a primary. I've talked to hundreds of people. Oh, it's a primary. And I said, yes, it's a primary. It's very important. If you don't nominate the right man, how in the heck are you going to vote for him?
That's right. Very right. Never missed the primary, neither did I.
Sorry.
Well, you ought to state the name. Let Victor state the name of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Victor,
you give him that book we have.
From Humble Beginnings, West Virginia. Yeah.
Well, let me have it.
Yeah. I'm sure I have the book at home. Somebody did have it.
Tells the early history.
Yeah, just
say. Yes. The following excerpt is from a book published by the West Virginia State Federation of Labor entitled From Humble Beginnings, covering the period of 1903 to 1957. On page 67, with reference to the activities and participation of delegates from Wheeling, West Virginia. And here is Valentine Ruther, who was one of the delegates participating in that convention.
One reason why the West Virginia labor body had listened to the thunder on the left was the influence of certain delegates upon the Wheeling Convention. The manifesto calling on all workers to unite was introduced by Valentine Ruther, a delegate from the Wheeling Beer Drivers Local, and two other brewery workers, one from Wheeling and the other from Huntington. The resolution expressed Val Ruther's belief that economics and politics must be hitched together, for politics without economics has no orientation, and economics without politics has no engine to propel and guide it toward the welfare destination of the working men. In the Ruther system, politics was the tool of economics. Valentine Ruther, whose son Walter P. Ruther became president of the United Automobile Workers and vice president of the AFL-CIO, was a leader of the labor movement. He was an active delegate to the 1911 and 1912 conventions of the State Federation, working diligently to strengthen the state labor organization. Val Reuther worked for $1.50 a day and brought up 4 sons and a daughter to lead distinguished lives. He ran the Wheeling Local Brewers Union so effectively that his workers never had a strike. At the age of 23, he became president of the Ohio Valley Trades and Labor Assembly, the central organization of Wheeling. Val Reuther lived in the days when it took courage to act publicly as a labor leader. It took double courage in Valentine's case, because in politics he was linked with Debs and the Socialists. Val Reuther had run unsuccessfully for Congress from the Wheeling District on the Socialist ticket. Well, that isn't correct, I run for the legislature.
Yeah, he made a mistake there.
What I started to say before, you got it turned off?
Why, don't you want this on the record?
Go ahead.
Turn it off, I'll tell you the story then if you want it on.
Well, that's all right, tell us the story.
Well, as near as I can recall, in 1908, we had an election asking the people of Ohio County to support a bond issue to build a new high school. Our high school in Wheeling at that time was in a dilapidated condition. It had outside toilets, and the inside of the walls, the plaster fell off. It was unsafe. So I spoke throughout the Ohio County in all sections, urging the people to support the bond issue. The bond issue was carried, and when the Board of Education of Ohio County met to deliberate as to what kind of a building they were going to have erected, I appealed to them to put a union labor clause in the contract, telling them that if they hired union men, they would get competent men who had learned and served 4 years as apprentice under competent mechanics. I said, if you're going to lay out money for which the people of Ohio County have to pay a building, they have a right to get a good building. The Board of Education yielded to my request and put a union clause in it. Now, the strange thing that happened in giving out bids, a man by the name of W.W. Wood, who at that time operated a planing mill on the corner of 33rd and Chaplin Street in Wheeling, and he was known to be very antagonistic to organized labor. So he got the contract, and naturally the representatives of the various crafts in Ohio County were somewhat skeptic as to what would happen. So after the foundation, now he just had the contract for the woodwork. The foundation was laid and they were ready to begin with the woodwork, and he knew that he had to employ union labor, so he made the request with the business agent, and the business agent told him that they would furnish him with union men, providing he would employ union labor on all his other jobs that he had. This he refused to do. So the Board of Education called a meeting. He had his 2 lawyers there, Caldwell and Caldwell, which were some of the shrewdest in the city of Wheeling. And he was there, and I had 5 men, each one representing their craft, with me. I knew W.W. Woods from past experiences, and I cautioned the men that came with me. I said, now, when these lawyers or Mr. Wood present their case, please don't interrupt them. I said, if they make a statement that you know is not true, make a note of it, and then you can answer him later on. So the two attorneys pleaded the case. They said that the Board of Education could not require Mr. Woods to employ union men outside of the high school. And then W.W. Woods took the floor after his attorneys finished and made his spiel. When he was through, I took the floor as the spokesman for the group, and I pointed out to them, I said, now you gentlemen, no doubt at the advice of your engineer or whoever it was that drew up the building here, recommended certain material to be used in the construction of this building. Now, if Mr. Woods would go to the firm that handled that particular lumber, and they would tell him, yes, Mr. Woods, we will sell you this lumber at the same price and under the same condition that we furnish it to any other contractor. If those conditions and that price didn't suit him, would he be justified under this agreement to substitute other lumber? They said no. I says, all right, now here it comes to labor. The committee here specified union labor. Why? Because they were convinced in their own mind that union labor consisted of men who had 4 years of training under competent mechanics. And you would get a good job instead of hiring men that are good with a hatchet and saw. I had scarcely proceeded, and Mr. Woods started to interrupt me. I left him go two or three times, and then I appealed to the chairman, who was a son of old Raymond that run the Raymond Brewery. I knew him well. I said, Mr. Chairman, I said, we met here to discuss the question of union labor in the construction of our high school. And I said, our committee listened attentively to the attorneys that Mr. Woods had to represent his case. We listened to him carefully, and I said, at no time did we interrupt him. I said, I have scarcely begun, and Mr. Woods has already interrupted me three times. I'm sorry, but I'll have to ask him to act the part of a gentleman, even if he finds it somewhat difficult, and keep his peace. And boy, he could have bit a spike in two, you know.
And that's all.
And the board unanimously supported us. And boy, the building trades had a banquet then in the labor hall, and I was the honored guest, and boy, they really had a time. I enjoyed that.
Brother.
I want
get 10 copies of that. Father, tell the story about the Carnegie Library in Wheeling.
The what?
The Carnegie Library.
How you blocked the Carnegie Library in Wheeling.
Don't you remember the story about when
the library
Carnegie offered a grant for a library?
Oh, yes. We had, I brought that up in the assembly, and we had men stationed at every precinct, you know.
But tell and the background.
Tell what's the story.
How did this start?
Who first proposed a library?
Carnegie offered the city, I think, if I remember right.
The city?
Yeah, that's
$75,000 to build a library,
Carnegie Steel?
Well, Carnegie, the
steel.
Yeah,
Carnegie
you know, yes.
Steel.
Oh, he was bitter against organized labor. And I brought it up in the central body. I said, if we're going to have a library, I said, if I want to get a book in there, I want to get a book that's got the label in it. And I said, if Carnegie builds one, I says, they'll be outlawed. He wouldn't buy one. They'll all be anti-labor. And I says, I want a library that is for the working people. I said, the rich can buy their own books. So we decided that we'd have somebody stationed at every precinct. And as people come to vote, while we talk to them, you know, and persuade them to vote against it. And we beat it, I think, 5-3. Boy, that really burned some of the businessmen up, you know. He says, here we could get $75,000, now the people can reach in their own pocket.
Wasn't it true that one of the stipulations in the Carnegie I read that they had to buy the books from certain places, and you had no control as to what books?
You didn't know what kind of books you was going to get.
So you were afraid that the character of the books would reflect the company's views?
Why, of course.
And you wanted a library that had books that...
That's right.
...represented more the interests of all the community.
Well, at least fair. They wouldn't be prejudiced against labor.
So you won the fight?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we won the fight. We didn't get no...
Satsa, no. lustig sein, fröhlich sein, ob sa sa sa. Und die Lustigkeit kommt von der Fröhlichkeit her, und die Fröhlichkeit kommt von der Lustigkeit her. Und dann wollen wir noch einmal, ei was sa sa. Lustig sein, fröhlich sein, ob sa sa sa. Wenn ich komm, wenn ich wieder komm, wieder komm, carry ein mein Schatz bei dir. Wenn ich komm, und Städtle hinaus, Städtle hinaus, und du mein Schatz bleibst hier. Komm ich komm, beide sein Hort, und mein Freund bei dir. Wenn ich komm, wenn ich wieder komm, carry I mein Schatz bei dir.
Und so die Hochzeit, sei, und eine Kirchenwende.
In einem Kirchenrunde, das wäre ein Kirchenrand. Mein Liebchen ist verschwunden, das Gott gewonnen hat. Mein Liebchen ist verschwunden, das Gott gewonnen hat. Sie hat mir treu gesprochen, da will ein Ring dabei. Sie hat die Trage trocken, das Ring ein strong entzweit. Sie hat die Trage trocken, das Ring ein strong entzweit.
Das Wandernis des Mildes, das Wandernis des Mildes, das Wandern. Das muss ein schlechter Wille sein, denn niemals will das Wandern ein, denn niemals will das Wandern ein, das Wandern. Das
meinen grünen Seiden, ich hab dir gar so gern.
the Magdalene. To visit to Guru, this the mission blue. To the land of Lamb, most divine of thine. May the rook of mine and freedom side then. He have dear God, so can the Magdalene.
The recordings on this tape from 000 to 336 are statements by Valentine Ruther, recorded at the home of Walter Ruther on January 11th, 1963. Valentine Ruther is, when he recorded this statement, was 82 years of age. The tape from 336 to 519 includes some German folk songs sung by Valentine and Anna Ruther and participated in by Walter Ruther and his family, Roy Ruther and family, and Victor Ruther. These recordings were made on the same date, January 11th, 1963. End of tape.